something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, and welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Lattermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, a science writer for HowStuffWorks.com.
Today we're talking about helium. Not the kind you find in those balloons.
But the kind you find on the moon.
Yes, indeed. So let's kick off our podcast today and give our listeners some fun moon facts. I've got one. Can I start?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Where did the moon come from?
Outer space.
Well, yeah, kind of. So there's this theory, right? Scientists love theories, and this one is their favorite surrounding the moon. It's called the ejected ring theory. It goes like this. A couple billion years ago, there's this massive space collision. Two planets, one of which was Earth, and one of which was this one that came barreling into our neighborhood. They collided. In the resulting smash-up, the remnants of the two planets mixed together. They formed an orbital ring, and that eventually condensed into the moon. Ta-da!
Voila. Well, here's another fact that stems right off of that. It's the moon and the Earth, as we know them today, are in a gravitational relationship. The moon is trapped in the Earth's gravitational field, orbits around us, but the moon's gravitational pull tugs on the oceans, which creates the tides.
Right. And actually, that tug has been suggested as one source of energy. So basically, what we would do on Earth, we'd build these underwater turbines that would take advantage of this natural motion of the tides, and we'd have these turbines and we'd generate some electricity from it, basically.
Yeah, I've seen some designs that actually involve biomimicry that involve like basically a giant mechanical shark tail. It's the basic idea is that hey, nature came up with this best, we'll mimic this and use that to collect the kinetic energy of the tides.
Right, it's a pretty neat idea, but a couple of unknowns with this approach, like, are barnacles going to grow on the turbines?
Yeah. Do we need to put even more junk on the bottom of our oceans?
I think not. So let's talk about helium-3 instead.
Yeah, helium-3, and this is basically normal helium, as was in my lungs earlier, except there's a one missing neutron.
And that's a key difference.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty key.
When I asked for helium-3 downstairs in the little lobby store, they had none.
They were all sold out because of Judy's 40th birthday party?
That, and there's virtually none of it. There's very little of it on the Earth.
Ah, but there's a lot of it on the moon.
Yes.
Or at least much more of it. Yeah, okay. Well, why?
Well, helium-3 forms when cosmic rays bombard helium-4 which is produced naturally through the fusion in the sun. All right, so the sun's pumping this stuff out. Our gravitational field and our atmosphere repel this stuff from entering the Earth's atmosphere. So what little of it there is on Earth has been here for just ages and ages. It's ancient stuff, and it's, like I say, there's very little of it. The moon, however, no atmosphere to speak of. It's just up there collecting this stuff age after age. So, you know, we reach a point where we have, you know, very little here, but just massive reserves on the moon.
Yeah, so there's like a mother load up there.
Yeah, we're talking 1 million tons of it on the moon.
Wow.
And to put that in perspective, they say that the amount of energy stored in that deposit is roughly 10 times that stored in fossil fuels on Earth.
Right. So helium-3 is awesome for nuclear fusion reactions. I mean, that's what we're really interested in. And what's more, it represents an improvement on nuclear fusion reactions that we've undertaken in the past.
To remind everybody, nuclear fusion is the process where you take two elements, you combine them, and it produces a new element and energy, and the energy being key.
Yeah, a lot of energy. It's the same reaction, like Robert said, that fuels our sun. And it's not fission, which is the splitting.
Right.
I always confuse those two, but fusion, fuse.
Fuse together, yeah.
Fission, split. Anyway, so when helium-3 is heated to high temperatures and you combine it with a little deuterium, and deuterium, of course, is an isotope of hydrogen.
Right, with it has a neutron next to its one proton.
You get this huge, huge, huge reaction and the energy, which is pretty much our energy dreams. This is the stuff of our energy dreams. This is the stuff that would make oil be gone and helium-3 rock on. You get nuclear fusion. I mean, this is what they're gunning for at the National Ignition Facility, but they just really haven't been able to generate a nuclear fusion reaction in a controlled fashion, in a safe fashion, or on a commercial scale fashion like they would with this helium-3.
Yeah, like theoretically, you could perform the same similar reaction with tritium, but one of the byproducts of that is just a whole boatload of radiation.
Yeah. So helium-3 tends to be cleaner, and it doesn't seem to pose a danger to surrounding areas.
Right. Far less radiation produced.
Well, what don't they like about it, though?
Well, there is the whole fact that it's mostly on the moon. Like I said, what small amounts we have on Earth is sufficient for tests and, horsing around in a laboratory, but not so much actually, like, gearing up for full-on production. And speaking of production, we can make helium-3, but we produce it as a byproduct of creating nuclear warheads. So that's not exactly an ideal situation either. And again, it doesn't produce large quantities.
And then there's the fact that we really haven't mastered the moon and back journey quite yet from a, you know, safety or efficiency perspective. I mean, people have been known to die on these trips. And efficiency-wise, it's not clear that we'll be getting out more than what we put in.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You have to be able to justify going to the moon and bringing this stuff back. And it's actually, there's more involved. It's not just simply landing the vessel, getting out the shovel, and throwing, you know, some rocks into the lunar vehicle and returning.
And incidentally, that's how we know that there is.
Exactly, yeah.
Helium-3 on the moon is because the astronaut Harrison Schmitt stuffed his pockets, his astronaut suit full of lunar rocks. And then we got around to analyzing them, and woe and behold, there is a ton of helium-3.
It kind of makes it sound like he shoplifted them or something, but
yeah, I don't think you can shoplift from the moon because it's the property of all mankind.
We'll get to that in a second.
We will get to that in a second.
But yeah, to bring it back from the moon, first of all, to mine it, you'd have to create some pretty high temperatures. We're talking like 600 degrees Celsius to 900 degrees Celsius to extract it from the soil and remove some of the impurities. And then you're going to have to further refine the stuff.
It doesn't just come ready-made.
Right. It comes in roughly 13 parts per billion in the lunar soil. So there would be a lengthy mining and refining process that would have to take place on the moon. And, I mean, what do we have up there right now?
Why does it have to take place on the moon?
Well, because otherwise we got to bring all that unrefined, like, moon rock.
So it's a matter of space,
really. Yeah, it's a matter of space. I mean, we couldn't even build a space elevator to the moon. But, I mean, yeah, it's the only feasible way to go about it is to refine it there and bring back the goods, you know? And, of course, up there on the moon right now, what, we have a flag, a few, you know, some chunks of lunar vehicles sitting around.
Golf ball or two,
yeah, because Alan Shepard hit a golf ball off of it.
Yeah, that's
one of the proudest moments in human history.
And then there's the other question of our fusion reactors really aren't quite up to the task yet.
Right. Yeah, we're talking, you know, theoretical stuff and you know, early schematics and designs at this point. And nobody's going to build, you know, try and build one of these things if we don't have the fuel to run it and make it, you know, earn its keep.
So the, I mean, the helium-3 that does exist up there is, it's monumental in terms of money, in terms of the monetary value.
High street value, yeah.
High street value for helium-3, no doubt. And a lot of people want it. Who wants it?
Everybody. I mean, obviously, the United States is interested. NASA's expressed an interest in it.
China has definitely expressed a very vocal interest. India, Russia, a couple of private corporations out there, I think, are also in on the helium-3 race.
Because we're talking about the future of energy production on the planet, and as well as the possibilities for the further exploration of our solar system. Because, you know, you mine it up there on the moon, and the moon is also an ideal launching pad, an ideal base camp, if you will, for further exploration.
Right.
Less of an escape velocity, et cetera.
Yeah, NASA outlined its whole, it's numerous, I think it has like 200 lunar exploration objectives. And this, clearly, helium-3 was one of them, as well as utilizing other lunar resources. There's a whole tab devoted to it in its spreadsheet. And it could get pretty competitive up there. I mean, this could be, we could be talking about the gold rushes of the 19th century, only on the moon and for helium-3.
The helium-3 rushes.
Yeah, so it's not really clear who owns the moon.
So who owns the moon?
Well, nobody really owns the moon, per se, because the UN says so.
Oh, well that clears it up. No, but seriously, that's...
Now, there's this moon treaty that they wrote up in 1979 that essentially does say the moon is the moon and its related resources are the property of, quote unquote, the common heritage of mankind.
And of course, it's one thing to say that, you know, then or even now when nobody's up there right now. We're not exactly hitting the moon a lot or have the wherewithal to mine and refine anything. So,
Once people do get up there.
Right, yeah, once the technology catches up with us, I could see this becoming much more of a pressing issue.
Right, and who's going to abide by the treaty?
Right.
It's not like some of the nations are that good at abiding by existing treaties now. Anyone?
Yeah, this is true.
So when are we talking about?
Well, it depends depends when you're looking into the future and who's doing the imagining, because I've read some articles where China was supposed to be up there right now.
Maybe they are.
Maybe they are.
Yeah. They just haven't reported it yet.
Maybe. But in theory, yeah, China was planning to be up there already.
I've also heard 2025.
Yeah, and that I think I saw 2050 something. So yeah, it's kind of up in the air.
So to wrap this up.
So yeah, until any of this comes to fruition, we have the whole tidal thing to fall back on.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
And I also think werewolves is a big possibility, because as we all know, the full moon changes people who suffer from lycanthropy into werewolves. And who's to say that that process doesn't give off a spare proton, right?
No doubt. No doubt,
so,
indeed.
I think we should look into that.
Yeah, if you're not interested in the werewolf prospect, or if you are interested in the werewolf prospect, or the moon, or helium-3, head on over to howstuffworks.com, because we have plenty for you to read. We also have a pretty cool blog over at blogs.howstuffworks.com, and that's called Science Stuff. So check it out, guys, and thanks for listening.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.